Goodeau's in Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm sitting here with Rudy, and Goodeau is with Patrick. How you doing there, Goodeau?
I'm doing great. How are you, sir?
Doing very well.
Now,
when you play the music and I'm remote, that my snaps are off. Is that right?
Yep, that is correct.
Yeah, well, I was reading this article in the Science Daily today. There's an article about Ray Charles having the most precise snapping that's been recorded. Ray Charles was really good at snapping, said musical acoustician Kenneth Lindsay at Southern Oregon University in Ashland. Charles snaps that open, it don't mean a thing, parentheses, if it ain't got that swing, are timed so well that he's never more than 5 milliseconds off the tight beat.
Lindsay but doesn't says that the mean physics, he has no swing?
What's that? No, you don't want to be off.
Swing?
No, swing is absolutely precise in term with itself. It's just that it's lagging a little bit on where the beat is. But once you decide where it is, you can get that exact. Lindsay studies the physics of the sound of swing music, such as Ray Charles' hit. And in a talk last week at the Acoustical Society of America's joint meeting in Honolulu, how do we miss that? With the Acoustical Society of Japan, he explained that we created a visual analysis of the bouncy, energetic, even lopsided musical style of swing. If you're tapping your feet, that's swing, he said. No, that's just wrong. I tap my foot to 20th century classical. To study swing, he looked at the popular dance music in all cultures, a loose rhythmic style that is different from syncopation, in which a note is played when a pause is expected and an expected note isn't played. Swing, he said, relies on drama and emotion and a micro timing of pulses and meters that aren't found in other styles. Swing uses a lot of triplets, irregular notes that are 2/3 the length of a regular note. Swing is found in American jazz, Caribbean beats, Brazilian swingé, reggae, samba, and many other musical styles around the world. To really see what this universal but mysterious music looked like, Lindsay broke down famous swing songs like Fever and Graceland in various ways. He measured the song's note and pulses very finely to within 3 to 10 milliseconds per musical event, sometimes even fine-tuning the differences between seconds to a half a millisecond. This way he could separate out instruments, voices, and drums by their pitch and note. He created graphs that separated out the instruments. That's how we noticed that Ray Charles is incredibly tight snapping. So the link across country and back would certainly be several milliseconds. So that's where you can hear that.
You would normally be exactly accurate, but that's that speed of light thing.
It's not the speed of light. ISDN is not light.
Okay.
It's not light. There's some of it is laser, right? Some of it's
some switching involved. Also,
there's some switching involved too. So. But I'm a little off. I don't know if I'd be as close as Ray Charles. You know, I have all that visual distraction to throw me off. You know, blind people aren't looking at stuff. I look at it like a bird flies by and it might slow me down a little bit, my attention. But being blind is a big advantage to snapping right on time. 866-570-PEN, 7366. That's a big piece of news for Goodeau because that means he's handling the phone calls. 866-570-PEN, 7366. Goodeau will answer your calls in Vegas and I'll be here listening. PennRadio@gmail.com will also always get to us in PennRadio.com. And the thing I want to talk about when we finally get to the phones is I'm going to talk about this Gwyneth Paltrow thing. You know, Gwyneth Paltrow was trashing Americans and says that Brits are more intelligent. And I want to say before that, the whole idea of patriotism kind of bums me, okay? The whole idea of it kind of bums me because I don't know that a country is that much greater just because I was born here.
Circumstances of birth, yeah.
Yeah, the circumstances of birth are what control that. But that doesn't mean, I've been to Britain, and Gwyneth Paltrow, you know, if she's talking about British people being more intelligent, I don't know who she's hanging out with in the USA. Well, but yeah, I just thought people could call in. You know, I've been around the world, I've seen stuff, and I thought people could call in and tell us what country America is better than. Just call up and tell us what hell holes you've been in around the world. 866-570-PEN, 7366. You know, I've been to Egypt, China, India, all of Europe, England, you know. I've been to Canada. You've been to South America, right?
I have. I've done a lot of traveling, yeah.
And certainly, if you're talking about human rights, you want to be talking about the USA over any developing country, certainly, you know, and the way women are treated. You know, in the Muslim countries, women are forced to dress like Batman. They have to run around dressed like Batman, just their eyes showing, you know, and they have to just, I guess they're trying to pretend that all the women in Muslim countries are superheroes. But what Gwyneth said was, and I'm not even this whole engaging in this whole thing is just nonsense. According
to she may have been at dinner with a bunch of English people when she said this.
That's also true. And she also said it to, what country did she say it to? She said it to some real jive country. Like Paraguay or something? Was who she was talking to. I'm trying to find it. I'm skimming here. But she said it to...
Portuguese.
She said to a Portuguese newspaper. But Academy Award-winning actress, what'd she win Academy Award for? See, we've already forgotten. Yeah. That's the thing that's so unintelligent about Americans.
Shakespeare in Love.
Shakespeare in Love. Good. Bingo. Rudy's there. Shakespeare in Love. And which is a play, originally a play written by Tom Stoppard, one of my favorite playwrights, who is English. I've met plenty of intelligent English people. Anyway, she lives in London with her husband, Chris Martin, has outraged Americans by reportedly saying that they are less civilized and intelligent than their British counterparts, which I guess means we don't laugh as much when we dress up in women's clothing. You know, if you're over in England, you better be willing to laugh your ass off every time a man a woman's clothing, oh, hello, because that is like, I would say, 40% of their television entertainment is men in drag. You know, a guy with stockings on, and they're on the floor.
Yeah, Benny Hill.
And, you know, even Monty Python. You know, you watch Monty Python, and it's all really smart and all really clever, and then all of a sudden they're dressed up in women's clothes, and you go, oh, okay. Yeah. And they also really, really love it. They seem to love dressing up in women's clothes.
I don't think that's funny.
I don't think it's particularly funny. You know, that was the great thing about, what's his name? You know what I mean?
Benny Hill.
No, not Benny Hill. The guy who's in The Aristocrats.
Einstein.
No, the really funny, how am I blanking on his name? He's a friend of mine.
Saget.
No, not Saget. It's not English. The English guy in The Aristocrats.
Billy Connolly.
Not Billy Connolly. He's Irish. The other English guy in The Aristocrats.
This has turned ugly.
This has turned really ugly.
I thought we were going to do a radio show, and now we're just going to talk about this guy.
How can I not remember his name? He's like, Easy's favorite comic. My wife's favorite
comic. Eddie Izzard. Eddie Izzard.
I love Eddie Izzard, too, and he would dress in women's clothing, remember?
I don't think he did it as a joke.
Yeah.
It wasn't a joke.
He just dug it.
He just liked it. I'm fine with that. That seems cooler than dressing up like a woman because you think it's funny.
I agree completely. I'm all for that. And our good friend Renee French just wrote in and said, you'd like Australia, tight clothing, big breasts. So,
I want to point out that I think Gwyneth Paltrow is, you know, she's not that attractive. And
I'm glad you're saying that because, first of all, her dental care is going to go right down the tubes. What you want to picture is Gwyneth Paltrow now with no teeth because she's now living. If you want to have sex with a full set of teeth in England, you better have three women that you're having sex with simultaneously. And you better split them up by you're the canines, you're the molars.
Now you're just name-calling.
I am. I'm just name-calling.
What I'm saying is that Gwyneth Paltrow is probably very, very lovely by British standards. And so they act like she's more interesting.
Sure, sure.
They're not willing to smile at her.
She's not competing with some of the really good. She's fine. Yeah, in England, if you went to England, you'd be one of the best-looking people in England.
Well, isn't that delightful? I'm going.
But what she says in the Paraguay Sun, I guess, which is what a quote here. I like living here because I don't fit into the bad side of American psychology.
See, I don't even know what that means.
I don't even know what it means either. I guess the British know what it means. I don't fit in with the bad side of American psychology. The British are much more civilized and intelligent. They don't talk about work and money. They talk about interesting things at dinner. And I love that she says they talk about interesting things at dinner. She's like, America, the band America in the song Horse with No Name, plants and birds and rocks and things. So I guess
right.
The word thing. When you sit down to dinner, let's say you're at the Algonquin Round Table, and you're with Benchley, and you're with Dorothy Parker, and all the intelligentsia of New York in that time, and you're with all of them at that point, and you sit around and you go, okay, everybody, let's talk about intelligent things. I mean, does that work? Let's talk about intelligent things. Is he supposed to say more than that? Okay. Now, the reason that Brits think we're stupid is that we send over Gwyneth Paltrow and Madonna to represent us. You know, it is quite obvious that everybody outside the U.S. and maybe even some Americans, but Americans are less intelligent than Britons, as Gwyneth Paltrow says. Rather, they have different preoccupations which are less cultured. However, Gwyneth Paltrow herself is a college dropout. Across the ocean, Americans, bound to take everything personal, are rallying against her. In response to the comment, an angry U.S. fan apparently remarked, "We're better off if she stays across the Atlantic. Americans might be less civilized and intelligent, but we sure buy a lot more tickets." That's talking about business and money, right? Business and money and less intelligent. Maybe she's just completely right. Paltrow is a descendant of a famous 17th century rabbi. What? A Russian rabbinical family. She's from a rabbi family.
Paltrovic,
yeah. Produced 33 rabbis over several generations. The actress says she is very proud of being Jewish, although she never mentions it. I put that in there. Did you know she was Jewish?
I did not know that.
It seems she was very proud of being Jewish. We would know it. I mean, we know that Sacha Baron Cohen is Jewish. We all know that. He's proud of being Jewish. My father had an incredible Jewish warmth. She just judges everybody by where they're from, right? A Jewish warmth. And we have Jewish warmth really bolstering us, Paltrow and her brother, all the time. We're 9 years old, you're hearing that you're the best person. It gets in there and you think, okay, I'm not going to be afraid to try things because I'm always loved no matter what. So that's what she says. Now, Paltrow has had a much publicized relationship and engagement to Brad Pitt, who dumped her for an American who's better looking than her. And she also is with Ben Affleck.
Also, you know, she hangs out in Hollywood.
Yeah, I know, Hollywood. So maybe she's just, maybe that's all her information. She's from Hollywood.
Could be her
too,
friends.
Right? Yeah.
It could be
maybe her
friends.
All she's saying is that her friends are stupid.
That's what she's saying.
And she's also, she's married to the guy in Coldplay, right?
Yeah.
And what Nobel Prize has he won? Was it science? He won the medicine. No, he didn't win any, actually.
Tuning. The Nobel Prize in tuning. You haven't heard of that one?
No, I haven't. That's great. So we have...
It's because you have such an interesting dinner conversation.
And very uninteresting differences.
Maybe the British are willing to make stuff up, like me.
So, interesting things that we're asking about here. We want to talk... We should just show... You know, all the other radio stations would be, like, attacking Gwyneth Paltrow for being the ugly, stupid bitch she is. But we shouldn't do that. We should take the high road, and we should talk about interesting things. smart things, intelligent things. So our topic for today, just so you know, it's always important on a show to have a topic. 866-570-PEN, that's 7366, penradio@gmail.com, penradio.com. We would like to talk about intelligent and interesting things, okay? But you said we had a few phone calls, don't we?
We do.
Who do you want to talk to?
Well, we have, Abby on line one.
Abby. How you doing, Abby?
How you doing?
Never better, boss. What's up?
All right. You wanted to know which countries were better than?
Yeah. Lay it on us.
Okay. I'll go with Egypt on this one. I have a good story.
Lay it on us.
All right. I was in Egypt with my then-girlfriend, Carmen West, in 1998. And crossing the border from Israel into Egypt at 3:30 in the morning, they offered to buy her from me for some animals.
They did not, Avi.
Swear on my life, I you can't make this stuff up.
Yes, I can make that stuff up. You're really telling me the truth?
But not me.
Okay.
But it gets better. I'm with
you. Slow down. You know on this show we like stories to be full and rich. What's your girlfriend's name again? What was her girlfriend's name?
She's my wife now. Her name is Hindi.
Hindi.
H-I-N-D-Y. Like the language.
Right. And what does she look like?
She's 5'1", 100 pounds, black hair, very good looking. Okay. I don't know why she's with me, but...
And what animals did they offer in exchange for her?
They had camels and sheep.
Camels and sheep? And what was the... how many camels and how many sheep were you offered for?
I didn't get into that because I was very scared, first of all, crossing the border that late at night. And you have to understand, when you're on the Israeli side, it's like very nice. They have a nice road. And the second you cross into Egypt, it's like you went through a different dimension. And you come into this like place where everybody's like bartering for everything. We're trying to get a taxi ride about 2 hours in to go to this resort town. I use that term very loosely, but we're trying to get...
As in last resort.
Right. We're trying to get to this resort town, and... We're trying to buy our way there. We want to use the smallest amount of money possible and use the most amount of objects that we have on it. So we have like a box.
I assume by your name and coming out of Israel that you are Jewish, or at least of Jewish descent. Is that right?
Yes, I am. And now that I heard that Gwyneth Paltrow is Jewish, you know, I may be ashamed, but I don't know yet.
And let me just know this. I guess let me ask this question as politely as I can. Why the hell were you going to Egypt, you retard?
It's a great question.
Thank
and
you.
To this day, I'm still trying to figure out what the hell I was doing there.
That was close.
Close, you
close,
made it.
Close.
Because I was in Egypt for 2 weeks, and I was paid to be in Egypt, and I regretted it every second.
The worst part about it wasn't as though I was in Cairo or anything. I was actually like in a back road, and it was scary as hell. Now that it was a good experience, but I would never do it again, because I think I'm slightly more intelligent now. But.
Okay. So, but you said this is just the start of the story. They offer you an undetermined amount of camels and sheep for your lovely wife. You decide, no, I'm going to try to get a taxi cab. What goes on from there?
So, my friend, he's been here before, and he speaks, you know, both Arabic and Hebrew, and he's trying to get us a ride. We finally get us a ride for, I forget the exact number, but it was something like 20 bucks and, like, 2 bottles of vodka. The guy was going to drive us 2 hours in the middle of the night.
Uh-huh.
We get into the car, we finally get in, he talks these guys away from us.
It is so smart to barter with your driver with liquor.
Yeah.
That's so smart.
It works, because... If all he was doing was drinking, it would have been good. But I didn't think that he was actually going to drink the vodka on the way. I thought, you know, he would...
And strangely enough, when you said it, neither did I.
Yeah.
I thought maybe it was a Christmas present or something.
He opened the bottle, and they started sharing it. He started sharing it with his friends really quickly, like one of them. And then he gets in the car, and he tells us to get in. And I'm, like, freaking out already because I'm going to be driving with this drunk Egyptian cab driver who's driving a 1930 Mercedes through the back roads of Egypt. But I get in anyway, and we're driving. And as we're driving, he takes out a bag, like a paper bag, and he... rolling paper, and he starts rolling stuff up. I thought he was rolling cigarettes,
yeah.
But apparently he has, you know, donkey weed or something, and he's rolling up, like, cigarette-sized joints, and he's smoking them one after the other, the whole way there. And all the while he has the bottle of vodka in the cup holder, and I'm freaking out.
So over in Egypt, the Mercedes all have square cup holders, right?
Yeah. No. It was a tall round bottle from we bought at the border of Israel. Whatever. My friend knew he could bribe them, so we bought a couple of bottles for like $3. Disgusting vodka anyway.
Now let me just ask something, Avi. Does this story go on from here?
A little bit.
Because I have to go for a break. Should I keep you over the break?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, we're going to hold on to Avi with his story of why we're better than Egypt. All brought on by Gwyneth Paltrow, trash in the U.S. 866-570-PED-7366. CBS Radio, The Free FM, Ben Gillette, Michael Goudeau. We'll be back with Avi after this. How'd that snapping sound? Sound okay, Goudeau?
Are you snapping?
I'm snapping, yeah. Going to wait. 866-570-PEN-7366. PENradio@gmail.com. PENradio.com. You know, we're live now. And I say we're live because if they replay this show ever, it'll be really funny. But when we where we when I was here preparing. I'm in New York here, and I was looking over what we wanted to talk about on the big show today. And I they had because Kramer is not doing the show anymore. They'd used one of our what's called euphemistically best of, which means repeat. Right before the show. So I had to prepare while listening to you and I talk. So I got to work the way other, you know, the people that listen to our show get to work. And it's okay. It's not bad to have us in the background.
Not annoying.
I hate hearing myself so much, and yet I got used to it. I got into the groove. It was all right. And we got Avi on the line. He's talking to us about Gwyneth Paltrow was talking about how she doesn't like the USA. And so we're just, for fun, Avi and I are talking about how we don't like Egypt. So go on. I was telling Rudy during the break that I was in Cairo for 2 weeks, and living in Cairo is the equivalent of smoking four packs of cigarettes a day.
I've heard you say this before.
Yeah, the air is so dirty.
I kind of laughed because I got what you were saying.
But go on. You've declined to sell your girlfriend, soon to be wife, for camels and sheep, and you've given two bottles of vodka and $20 to a cab driver who's also got an awful lot of loco weed. Like you saying that? So he's all hopped up on the goofballs, as the kids say.
Yeah.
And also drunk, and he's driving you through the wilds of Egypt in the middle of the night.
Okay, so through this road, first of all, there are no streetlights here, and there are no guardrails, and, you know, he's swerving all over the place. But the best part about this road is that there are several checkpoints from the border to the, you know, resort town of Dahab, and on the way, you have to stop, and I guess, I don't know, the border guards, you know, they're Egyptian soldiers in the white uniforms with, you know, I don't know, I guess they have, like, machine guns of sort, and they look into the car, and they look around to see what's going on, they ask where you're going, and, you know, it's very scary because, you know, you don't know what they're going to do, you're not really sure because you haven't been there,
sure.
And every time we pass one of these things, they would, like, the driver would kind of bribe the border guard with something, and at one point, he was eating a peach or some sort of fruit, and it was half-eaten, and he gives it to the guy, to the border guard, and the guy takes a bite out of it and says thank you and gives it back to him. The most disgusting thing I ever saw in my life. And I'm like, well, listen, you know, if that's what gets me through, you know, you can have all the apples you want. I don't care, you know, but just don't kill me. We get to the border town at about 4 or 5 o'clock
in
the morning.
I like that in your mind, sharing a peach is the equivalent of trying to buy your wife for camels and sheep.
I just like
your sensibility, Avi. We're learning so much about you while we learn about Egypt. Go on.
Good. There's a lot more to me.
Okay.
we get there, and, you know, we need to find we'll use the term loosely. We need to find a hotel room. We managed to find, like, a little, I guess, kind of hut or something, but it's
a
more
manger.
Like for, yeah, something to that effect. And we paid $10 to stay there because we needed to actually get something better, but we needed to wait till morning. So
sure.
We get into this place, and, you know, I go to take a drink of water, and the faucet, I put the water and I drink it, and I realize, I think they tapped the plumbing line directly into the Red Sea because it was salt water. Not filtered or anything.
Really?
And disgusting. I don't know what the hell was going on. And the guy says, oh, you know, it's just today. Tomorrow it's going to be better. I'm like, how is that going to be better tomorrow? Like, what are you going to do? Run a new pipeline to the U.S. or something, you know, but that's not going to get any better. We stay the night. We get the hell out of there in the morning. We got, I guess, what would be a 4-star hotel in America for, I think it was $28 a night.
It was
great for us. It had everything, actually, believe it or not. In Egypt, it had everything you need for $28 a night.
Yeah, our hotel was great in Egypt, and really cheap because the Canadians were paying for it. So, you know, they weren't paying anything. Our company was Canadian. I also want to point out, and I have a confession to make, and I think this is probably an awful thing to say in public, but in our hotel rooms, all of them that were in Egypt, they all had stickers on the bureaus that pointed to Mecca. Did you have those?
Oh, no, I did not. Yeah. That's so funny.
They had stickers on the top of there, and it said, you know, Mecca, and had a little arrow. And, well, actually, it said it, of course, in whatever language it was, Arabic or whatever. And it said, and it pointed to Mecca. And I guess I should never, this probably means I'll put a fatwa on my ass or something, but I moved one of the bureaus. because I couldn't steam up the sticker. I tried to peel the sticker and it wouldn't peel because it had been there so long. So I moved the bureau. I changed the bureau with the dresser so that Mecca, I moved Mecca. And I just thought, well, you know, if one Muslim goes to hell because of me, I'll have done a good deed.
Well, we met the greatest. I guess he was Muslim, but it's funny at the time. This is 1998. I didn't think anything of the name. A friend of mine, the guy I was traveling with, he had been down there a few times, and he had like Sudanese Bedouin who lived in Egypt, and his name was Sam, but his real name. Hello.
Yes, I'm listening.
I'm sorry, but I was. His real name is Usama, and at the time, I didn't really put two and two together because...
Wait a minute, you mean Sam is short for Usama?
Usama. I have a picture of this guy. I could send it to you. I'll send it to your Gmail account.
But wait a minute, my dad's name was Sam. He wasn't Usama, was he?
Listen, this guy, well, you know what his name was? It's funny, his name was Usama, but he's trying to Americanize it. I don't know why, by the way, because he wasn't ever getting out of Egypt. But, we actually visited his, I guess you can call it a house. My wife couldn't wait to get the hell out of there. She was scared out of her mind because there was like a pigeon coop back there. And, he basically lived outdoors and he had like a couple of towels hanging over for his roof. But his name was Usama, which is, like, interesting, but that's just a side point. But
now, you're winding down your story?
I'm winding down the story.
Okay.
I don't know if there's anything else that was that interesting, except for the fact that the electricity goes out in the entire resort town of Dab, like, once every 3 hours.
Oh, yeah, well, that's true. You never have electricity there.
We met a couple of interesting UN guys who kind of sit around and do nothing but drink Heinekens all day. beer was 50 cents.
Yeah.
Cigarettes are really cheap. They're a quarter a pack. There are some upsides. Because I think we spent, minus the hotel room, we spent about $40 over the course of 5 days on everything. Food, beer, snorkeling, camel rides, everything. You put it all together.
But we have to bring this around to Gwyneth Paltrow. Did you talk about interesting and intelligent things?
It's very hard when you bring up her name, but,
I mean, did you talk over there about interesting, intelligent things?
No, we kind of just hung out and smoked a lot of, donkey weed. That was really it.
Thanks a lot.
We did get a garbage bag full of pot for about $10. It was the most disgusting, vile thing you ever saw in your life.
Rudy!
I don't even know if it was smokable. I'm not sure what it was, but...
Rudy is very excited now. Very excited. A garbage bag full of weed for $10.
I can't make this stuff up. It was piles and piles of weed. And it wasn't, I didn't really look, for all I know, they could have just picked the plant out of the desert and told us it was weed.
Yeah.
Because I didn't really get you stoned, but I don't know, it was fun to smoke.
Okay, thanks a lot, Avi. I think Avi.
All right, so when are you running for president? We need a good libertarian in office.
Okay, well, thank you so much. I'll consider it. Thanks a lot, Avi.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Now, I think that Avi just showed, Avi was an American. He talked about interesting and intelligent things. He talked about getting donkey weed, a trash bag full for $10.
Well, you know, we got an email from our pal Vlad, who says that a year ago, October 2005, Gwyneth Paltrow was complaining about the Brits. She said, the street's filthy. Can we take off our shoes before we come into your house? Also, customer service is just rubbish in England. People are much more relaxed there, and things take forever to get done. They'll tell you it takes 2 weeks to get your internet service to be fixed. It drives me nuts.
So Gwyneth Paltrow is just really just bitching about anything.
She's stoned. She's drunk. Oh, you mean.
Okay, well, we're going to be back after that. 866-570-PED, 7366, pedradio@gmail.com, pedradio.com. We're kind of sort of trying to talk about interesting and intelligent things so Gwyneth Paltrow will like us. You know, I'm sitting here with a good American, Rudy, and that whole story came down to him, $10 trash bag of weed. That's all he was thinking about. It's going to go very, very well for him. Excuse me, I have this, I don't know what's wrong with me. I either have a cold or allergies, but I get this every year at this time, and it's just a sinus congestion. We should do a whole show on diagnosed pen, but right now we're in the middle of this Gwyneth Paltrow thing. So if you hear me sniffing a little bit, that's what it is, something wrong. And you got new teeth, right?
I do. I nearly died. But you know, when I came home after this, I had this long dental procedure, and they put on some new caps and stuff. And,
so you have caps on your teeth? You're like, how come I'm the game show host and you get caps on your teeth?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I just need to look better than you. I'm trying to look, that's all that matters. The only thing that matters in my life.
And what they put on you?
They're called veneers.
Mm-hmm.
They're like little tiny thin little things that go over your teeth to make them look whiter.
They glue them on?
I mean, staining when I was a kid, so they glued them on, yeah. But they do some grinding first, stuff like that. So, I came home after this procedure on Saturday and was...
How long did it take, the procedure?
3.5 hours.
3.5 hours?
It was, yeah, because, you know what, I did them all at once. I thought, you know what, I don't want to come in 4 times, I'm going to do it in 2. And so it was hellish.
Uh-huh. Can you eat okay now?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, but they're very
basically
sensitive.
Basically,
they're temperature sensitive right now.
Okay.
Because my gums hurt because I had I had a million shots and stuff. It was really
okay.
It was very unpleasant. But I came home with and heated up a bowl of soup to have some soup. And as I was still kind of woozy and dropped the bowl a couple of inches to the counter and splashed soup everywhere.
Uh-huh.
And I start eating the soup, and I'm having just what is absolutely the worst nightmare in the world as I crunch down on something. And I stop and I pull it out and it's a little white chunk of tooth, you know, and I go, oh my god, that can't be right. That must be just some glue or something that was left in there from when they were doing it. And I take a couple more bites and another piece feels like it breaks off. And I pull it out of my mouth and it's another little piece of tooth. And as I take the bites, I get more and more of these little pieces of my teeth. I go, my god, they're just coming apart. I can't believe this. They must have used the wrong glue or something horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out I had actually broken the bowl when I dropped it. I had a bowl full of white ceramic pieces that looked exactly like my teeth. I was totally freaked out. It was, you know, it was a nightmare. My teeth are breaking apart. Oh, my God, what am I going to do?
You are such an idiot.
As soon as I finish my soup, I'll call the dentist. Turns out I'm eating glass.
And they look really good. I mean, is it like
they look great. They look
now,
perfect.
Do you do that weird thing that guys with the caps on them used to do where you like you have too much teeth in your mouth?
No, I don't think so.
Then stick out?
No, you know, it looks like they took my teeth out and cleaned them and put them back in.
Uh-huh.
They look exactly like my teeth used to look, except clean.
Wow, that's great. That's great.
This and is, painful. They're clean and painful.
That forever. It was expensive?
Yeah, it's pretty expensive.
Yeah.
But it looks great.
Yeah.
It looks really good.
You know, your looks are your living. You and,
yeah, exactly.
You and Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah.
So
this will be good for my weight issue as well, because I can't eat.
So you and Gwyneth would be able to talk about interesting
and
intelligent things. We still got people waiting around on the phone?
We do.
We kept Avi on for like a half an hour, you know.
We did.
But we got Otis, right?
Want to talk to Otis?
Yeah, I'll talk to Otis, sure. I want to go with all names that start
Rudy
with vowels.
Hey, Rudy, how are you today?
Doing very well, thanks.
Listen, I think there might be something to your theory about people who call into radio shows being like crazy old cat ladies. I don't have any cats, but I am the whack job who wrote that long email about depleted uranium to you the other day.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm obviously out of my tree, right?
Okay, fine. So what are you going to say about other countries?
Well, I just came from 6 years in China.
6 years?
Yeah.
What were you doing over there?
Sleeping with Chinese girls.
he couldn't read the map. He couldn't find the airport.
I was teaching English, and it was quite an experience.
Was that a good gig?
It is a good gig. You know, in dollars, it's a rotten gig. But in the local economy, you do very, very well, and you can live like a prince.
And were there a lot of Chinese girls who wanted to sleep with you?
Yeah.
I mean, Americans are popular over there?
They love us.
Yeah,
they love us. They love anybody, you know, who speaks English, especially if they're white.
Uh-huh.
And they have this weird racial kind of thing over there. They're racist in a way that is really not familiar to us. And that's kind of one of the things I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, when I was over there, they had two prices.
Oh, they've quit doing that. Yeah, the government used to tell them that they had to have two prices.
Yeah, and that was really goofy to have like a white price and an Asian price, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Well, they stopped doing that. But they do still, you know, cheat anybody who's from out of town, whether they're Chinese or from out of the country.
Uh-huh.
A lot of places do. But
are you fluent in Chinese?
Oh, I wouldn't say I'm fluent. And also, the Chinese that I speak is a particular dialect. I mean, there are as many forms of the Chinese language as there are towns in China.
Really?
So if I lived in a city called Chengdu. It's the capital of Sichuan province, what we call Zhejiang.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So where the hot food is, you know,
sure.
And the hot babes.
Yeah.
And if you take a drive, like 2 hours down the highway, to the, there's another city called Nejiang, which by Chinese standards, Nejiang is a small town of only 4 million people.
Okay. Yeah.
And if you go from Chengdu to Nejiang, they have a hard time understanding each other.
Well, you know, that's also true. I mean, it really is true. If you go to Boston, Massachusetts, and you take someone from the Ozarks or something, they have trouble. Is it more than that?
It's worse than that, yeah. For some reason, because China was so closed off for so long, and they had no experience with foreigners and with people who don't speak Chinese, and they're still not a highly mobile population the way that Americans are.
Mm-hmm.
Although it's kind of changing, they're becoming more so. They have this problem where it's never occurred to them that people speak differently in other places,
So
they're totally baffled if you have any kind of accent.
And now, what do you look like?
My family's mostly Irish. I'm a big white guy.
How tall are you?
About 6 foot.
Yeah, because I'm 6'6", and we were like 200 clicks out of Beijing in this town called Wuchao.
Uh-huh.
And which I guess is from the song "Woo Woo Chow," things are going to get easier. And I was out there, and when I walked through the town, I was the first white person they had seen, and I was also the biggest human being they'd seen. And it was like I was walking in town like I was the giant. Kids were like running away, and they kept yelling like Michael Jordan at me. They thought I was Michael Jordan. But I mean, were you places?
Yao Ming.
What's Yao Ming?
Yao Ming, he's a Chinese basketball star. He's in the NBA. And he's
big. And it was astonishing. I had never been a place where I was that rare. Were you places where white people were really rare?
Well, white people are fairly rare everywhere. But these days, if you're in a big city, and Chengdu is a big city, it's not that big a deal. But people will stare at you. You kind of feel like you're in a goldfish bowl. And you don't have to go very far out of town to draw a crowd.
And they grab your hair, too.
They grab anything they can.
But they grab my hair.
I was in a rural area one day, not too far from Chengdu, and I was walking, and I took a wrong turn and went down a dead end that ended at an elementary school. And the kids were out on the playground at, you know, having lunch. You know,
is this the story you told the police about why you were in a grade school stalking kids?
hey, whoa. I wasn't stalking anybody.
Okay.
But... there was, you know, maybe 1,000 kids on this playground, and they all started running towards me.
Uh-huh.
And I thought somebody was going to get trampled. I got really scared.
That somebody would be Otis.
It would have been one of these little, you know, 6-year-old kids.
And they were just thrilled. And did you know Chinese when you went over there?
No, not a
what
word.
What kind of trouble?
I was in Russia.
How do you teach it?
I had this Russian wife, and I was in Moscow living with her, and we broke up.
You're a crazy person, aren't you?
Yeah.
I'm talking to a crazy person. Why did you leave the U.S. to go to Russia and then to go to China? What problems have you got here?
You know, I just kind of got itchy feet, you know. I wanted to see some other things.
Now, how far outside of itchy feet were you in China? Itchy feet is a town, isn't it?
I was all over China. I mean, Chengdu is close to Tibet.
And you lost your, you got rid of your Russian wife.
Yeah.
How'd you get your Russian wife?
Starting my own United Nations.
How'd you get your Russian wife? Was it like mail order?
She read some short stories and poetry that I wrote on the internet and wrote me fan mail.
Really? So she spoke English?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you married her? And you lived in Moscow. You went to her to marry?
Well, she came to the U.S. originally, and, you know, she came on business with her company, and we hooked up. And after a couple of visits, she called me from Moscow and told me that she was pregnant.
Oh. So
and,
you had
her English was really good.
I didn't really want to get married, but, you know, she was pregnant. I figured I'd be a stand-up kind of guy.
So to speak.
Yeah, so to speak. And she came to the States to live with me, and she was here for a year, and she hated it.
What'd she hate about? You married a Russian Gwyneth Paltrow.
Pretty much, yeah. She hated it. She complained about everything.
That we didn't talk about intelligent and interesting things?
Oh, we did, but she wanted to speak to people who spoke Russian,
uh-huh.
and she complained about that a lot. But one day we were at the grocery store, and I heard some people speaking Russian.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, hey, honey, listen, you know, they're speaking Russian. You should introduce yourself. And
do you speak Russian?
For a minute. Huh?
Do you speak Russian?
Not much, okay. A little. But she listens to these people talking in the grocery store, and she says, no, I don't want to talk to these people. They're peasants.
Wow. Wow.
Sounds like a sweet gal.
Yeah, they were Ukrainians or something. I mean, she could have easily spoken with them, but she felt it was beneath her to socialize with these people.
And where's your son or daughter now?
In Moscow.
Oh, man, what a drag. How old is he or she?
It is a drag. She's six, and I miss her terribly. And now my Chinese wife is pregnant. It's going to be a boy.
And where's your Chinese wife? Here in the U.S.?
Yeah, she's here with me.
She having a good time so far?
She's loving it. My dad's teaching her to play bridge. She's becoming a bridge addict.
Do her feet itch now that she's here?
I'm sorry?
Do her feet itch now that she's here?
Her feet don't itch. She wants to stay. But she misses her mother, and her mother wants to come and join us here.
Of course.
You're going to move them all over here.
Moving.
So tell us more about
that.
See, when I was in China, it was just cold and miserable, and I could not believe how the people had no attempt at all to interact with us. I mean, they really did not like Americans just on a racial thing. But once you were living there, was that a whole different thing?
Totally different. Totally different. You know, the time when you were living there, since you say that they had two prices then, was the time when the government really was less friendly to foreigners, and they would tell people how to behave towards you.
Yeah.
And since then, the government has encouraged people to be friendly to foreigners. Now, I mean, people will come up to you everywhere you go, and they'll say things like, "Hello, I want to be the friend of you."
Now I saw
an American guy who'd been living there for years in Chengdu. He was wearing a T-shirt that he made himself, and in Chinese it said, "Yes, I speak Chinese. No, I don't want to be your teacher."
And you taught classes, so your classes were all taught in English.
Yes, that's right.
And what is the curriculum? Did you make it up, or are they just books you were going through?
Well, now that's an interesting thing.
Interesting thing. See that, Gwyneth Paltrow? Yeah, Gwyneth. Interesting thing he just said, Gwyneth. We're talking about interesting thing. God damn you to hell. Go ahead.
I happen to be a pretty good teacher, but I don't have credentials to speak of.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I made up my own curriculum. But what I found was that the schools, I should say, because I taught at a lot of them, they really didn't care. The schools are run like businesses, and the headmaster, all he wants is to put a white face up in front of that class so he can point to that and tell the parents, look, we have a foreign teacher. And then charge them more money to get their kids into that class.
Uh-huh.
And as a result, you've got, you know, you're up there, you're trying to teach oral English. And, you know, that's a class that should have maybe, you know, 15 or 20 students at the most to be effective. And they would cram 75 kids in there.
Well, Otis, we got to wrap it up now. But I think you did the most important thing we could have done. And that is, you said we were talking about intelligent and intellectual things, just like the Brits. See, we can do it, Gwyneth. Come on home, Gwyneth. All is forgiven. This is Penn Jillette and Michael Godeau on the big Free FM CBS Radio. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.